Well, I wasn't here last week, but I can see looking at the church that you've recently celebrated Harvest Festival, because there's a lovely display over there, I can see, and if like me you weren't here last week, you might want to have a look at those little reminders. There's a whole menagerie of little creatures, farm animals, on the window ledge over there. And there's a net full of fish. I think you did fishy prayers last week, am I right?
Yes.
Yeah, fishy prayers suspended from the pulpit. So thank you for those who wrote the prayers. And I think it was probably the Girls Brigade, I believe, who did the display over there, which is great. And when I go through the vestry into the room beyond there, there's still lots, all your harvest stuff, so hopefully we'll get it to where it needs to be very soon. But I mention this because it occurs to me as I was preparing for the service today, that in many ways, the theme of today's service is really a continuation of what you were celebrating last week at Harvest Festival. At Harvest, as we celebrate God's generosity, God's provision as creator, but also as we think about the way that we share the good things that God has given to us. And as I said, that continues today. So we're going to be listening to two readings from the Bible. The first one is from the book of Exodus, and we are with the Israelites as they are on their, well, they didn't know it at the time, their 40-year sojourn traveling through the wilderness. And we get to the point where they're grumbling, and they seem to grumble a lot, the Israelites. I don't blame them wandering in the wilderness, but I like the word that's used in the King James Version. Instead of using the word grumbling, it says they murmured. So we're going to catch up with the Israelites murmuring. What are they murmuring about? That there's not enough food to eat. And some of them are even thinking, oh, it was better in Egypt. Yes, we were in slavery. Yes, the Egyptians put us to hard labor, but at least we had something to eat when we were in Egypt. And now, what are we going to do in the desert? So we're going to hear how God provides food to the Israelites in the wilderness. But perhaps just as importantly, it's not just the provision of food, but the instructions they're given about how they are to take and share the food, because the basic rule is don't take more than you need. Just take what is sufficient for you. And we get a distinct message that although God is a generous God, God promises to give us what we need rather than sometimes what we want. And I think it's quite significant that when we pray the Lord's Prayer, we pray for daily bread, just a simple, basic necessity of life, day by day. And our second reading is a parable that Jesus told. In some ways, it's curiously up to date because we hear a lot at the moment in the news of people debating what is a fair wage. And we all know that many people have witnessed their wages going down in real terms. So being paid the right amount and what is a fair wage actually underlies the parable that Jesus tells, but he gives it an unusual twist. Once again, the message is that God provides enough for our daily needs. So God's generosity, God's grace, God's provision, that's the theme for our readings today. Let's listen now to that first reading from Exodus chapter 16 as we listen in to the Israelites murmuring in the wilderness. It's good to think a little bit about that story in the words of a brief reflection, and the reflection is called manna. We missed the word in that translation. You may be aware that when the Israelites said, what is it? The Hebrew word is manna. Manna means, what is it? Here's a brief reflection called manna. Enough. simply enough. Not too much, not an overabundance, but enough. Sufficient for the day, not for storing up or hoarding for the lean times, but enough. Seems fair that everyone should get just what they need, regardless of status. Just enough. These are the resources supplied by God. I want you to take a little memory trip with me and think back to your childhood. And if that seems too long ago, you're welcome to think about any children or grandchildren you happen to know. And think of the things that children say. And I wonder, what do you think children say perhaps more than anything else? Maybe, I love you. I'd like to think that. I'm not so sure. Now that we're adults, we may know how important it is to say and hear those three words, but I'm not sure we knew that as kids. When I think back to my own childhood, and if I'm being totally honest, I was more likely to say three other words. It's not fair. Do you remember? I wonder, as a child, do you ever find yourself saying those words? Have you ever overheard children saying those words? It's not fair. It's not fair that I have to do homework before I go out to play. It's not fair that their parents buy them whatever they want and we have to go without. It's not fair. I have a sister 2 years younger than me, so you can imagine that was a frequent complaint. All big brothers know that younger sisters get more than their fair share, right? And even though my children are fully grown, they still live at home, 34 and 31, I still hear those words. It's not fair. My brother doesn't tidy up the kitchen. He just leaves it in a mess. It's not fair. Carolyn Brown, an expert in children's ministry, observes, children, perhaps more than adults, want life to be scrupulously fair. They want everyone to get exactly what they deserve. No more, no less. And they want everyone to be treated the same. If an older brother went to bed at 8 when he was in year 3, he would insist that his younger brother do the same. Desserts must be served in equal portions. And cookies, especially the homemade ones, must be inspected carefully when shared by 2 or more. So perhaps if there's one thing we're all born with, it's this innate sense of fairness. And that's not a bad thing. In fact, it's a powerful and wonderful thing, because that sense of fairness, when developed into maturity, is the foundation for justice and equity. It's not fair that some can vote and others can't. It's not fair that some are paid more for doing exactly the same work. It's not fair that people can work every hour God gives them and still not afford a home to live in. It's not fair that some go to bed hungry while others fill landfills with their excess. Yes, our innate sense of fairness can lead to a strong and life-giving sense of justice. But not always, because our innate sense of fairness tends to be somewhat egocentric. We tend to assess fairness, as these examples from childhood demonstrate, in terms of what seems fair not only to us, but also fair for us. We want to measure fairness, that is, in terms of our own wants, our own needs, our own hopes and expectations, and often with little or at least secondary regard for the wants and needs of others. And unfortunately, this doesn't end with childhood. Which brings brings us to Jesus' parable about these day labourers. And if you can pick out the details on the screen, I found this beautiful and very colourful picture by Nebube, who's an artist from Kazakhstan. And what you can see in the picture at the top is the workers queuing up as they are recruited to work in the vineyard, with the owner on the left. And then at the bottom, you can see at the end of the day, there's the ledger out, and they're in reverse order receiving their wages. So the chap in yellow who starts off the queue at the top is the last one at the bottom, and he's putting his hand in his hair because he already suspects that something is up. So you might want to glimpse over to that picture as I'm talking about the parable. So Jesus' parable. And right up front, it's important to recognize just how tough it was to be a day laborer. These are the men with no regular employment who must stand in the town square hoping that some landowner or manager needs extra work done and will hire them. 0-hour contracts and the gig economy are not modern inventions. And the trouble is there were usually a lot more labourers than there was labour. And of course there were no benefit payments or social services to fall back on. So if you were both healthy and lucky, you'd get chosen and work a 12-hour day, and when you were done, receive a day's wage that would provide food for your family for the next day. In other words, you would have earned your daily bread. But if you were unlucky or unhealthy, you'd be passed over, possibly waiting all day, only to return home empty-handed to face the disappointed looks of your family, who are depending on you. That's how things were in Jesus' day, and everybody knew it. So what happens in the parable was quite extraordinary and totally unexpected. In the parable, everyone gets lucky. Some are chosen early, some more in the late morning, at noon, mid-afternoon, and some just an hour before closing time. And no doubt these last were not just pleasantly surprised, but downright flabbergasted by their good fortune when they were handed their wages and discovered they were receiving a full day's wage for an hour of work. Not, let's keep in mind, because they hadn't wanted to work all day. After all, they'd been there standing around in the marketplace just the same as the others, ready, willing, and eager. But they had been passed over, time and again, until right near the end. And I suspect they were delighted to discover they would be able to provide for their families, at least for another day. But there's a problem, isn't there? This act of generosity sets up expectations. Those who had worked all day started doing their mental calculations, adding up and anticipating just how much more they would surely receive than they'd originally expected or contracted for. So perhaps the guys at the end of the queue at the bottom are thinking, wow, if that guy in red at the front, he's got a whole day's wage for 1 hour. Just think what's coming to me and my pay packet, you know, and they're doing the mental calculations in their head. But, so maybe they're thinking, if they're getting a whole day's wage, maybe we'll get a whole lot more. But of course, that's not what happens. They receive a full day's wage, nothing more, nothing less, just as they were promised. And they're disappointed, maybe even angry. It just doesn't seem fair. But the landowner reminds them that in fact it's totally fair. They're being paid just what was promised. Everyone who worked that day went home with a living wage. Are you jealous because I am generous? Why begrudge such generosity? Why indeed except perhaps if it's human nature to do so, fallen human nature to be concise. Perhaps it's our own insecurity and lack of trust, but we come to understand and assess our lives not through the abundance we have been given by God, but instead by what we feel we still lack. And because of this gnawing sense of lack, we define ourselves over and against others, comparing and begrudging their good fortune because it wasn't our good fortune. Just as the grumbling labourers in the story were unable to celebrate that all the workers that day returned home blessed and able to feed their families for another day. Charles Cusa writes, presumably, had they been the recipient of the owner's generous method of bookkeeping, they would have been overjoyed. What they cannot take is the beneficence that puts these latecomers on a par with them. The grumblers are not really against grace. They are against grace shown to others and what that implies. It's an old story. Jonah sat down on the brow of the hill outside of Nineveh and pouted when God spared the city. The elder brother thought his father a doting old fool when the father invited him to join the celebrating at the prodigal's return. The Pharisee at prayer thanks God that he is not like the sinful publican. The servant released from a massive unpayable debt fails to show the same mercy to an indebted colleague. Divine grace is a great equaliser which rips away presumed privilege and puts all recipients on a par. And that's hard to stomach when we have burdened ourselves with a merit system and want to see some reward for our labours. So this is not a parable about wages or labour management or business ethics. It's a story about grace. Again, to quote Carolyn Brown, to fairness fanatics, Jesus says that God is not always fair. God, first of all, is loving and generous to us and to others. In other words, Jesus is inviting us to move beyond our deeply ingrained notions of fairness and to catch a glimpse of the utter limitless generosity of God. Now, this was not a new idea. In our first reading, we find God behaving the same way. During the years that the Hebrew people spent wandering in the wilderness before arriving at the Promised Land, God provided food for them in the form of a flock of quail landing in the camp at night and a layer of manna appearing on the ground with the dew in the morning. Although the quail was probably the more appetizing, you've got a choice of the menu. It's quail, or it's the vegetarian option, manna. What is it? I know which I would go for. Let's go for the quail. But it's the manna that has always captured people's imaginations. Probably because it was more mysterious and unknown. Manna, what is it? But the point of the story is about God providing for what everybody needed and not allowing anyone to try to get ahead of anyone else. If you went out in the morning and worked twice as hard to gather twice as much as you needed to try to get ahead, it would go rotten and you'd be left with nothing. Trying to gather extra was seen as both a vote of no confidence in God's ability to keep providing enough for each day and as an insulting attempt to outdo your neighbours. The manna was a sign of God's generosity to all, not an opportunity to try to get ahead of others, or to grab more than what was needed, or to hoard a surplus to the detriment of others. And there's a message here for us, living in a world which has sufficient resources to meet every person's needs, and yet these are not equitably shared, with a few enjoying more than they need, and the vast majority going without enough. Even if we take the UK alone, it's surely a disgrace that every year we throw away over 4.5 million tons of food, per family, that's an average cost of £470 a year. While 8.5 million UK families are struggling to put food on the table. We rightly celebrate that we have a generous God, a God who provides, celebrating last week at Harvest Festival. But the responsibility for sharing the fruits of his creation are placed into our hands. Perhaps it's time for Christ followers to be more vocal and visible about embracing lifestyles of simplicity and sharing, and of voting and lobbying for an end to unfair trade subsidies and regulations, and exploitation of workers and suppliers in countries where they do not have the political power to ensure that they receive fair recompense for their work and resources. Buying fair trade, reducing our consumption and unnecessary waste, and contributing to respected and effective aid organisations are all ways of participating and sharing God's generosity and law. And if it sounds too radical, well, so it is. But so too is the action of the landowner in the parable who points us towards God. God, who is so indiscriminate and lavish and generous, dispensing his grace, not only on those who, in our eyes, seem to deserve it, but also on those who don't. And God says, "Are you jealous? Because I am generous." And you know, the more I think about it, the more I thank God that God isn't fair. At least not fair by those childish rules of fairness that I've barely outgrown. For who truly deserves or can earn all that God has to give? Well, no one. Perhaps I think of myself as one of those labourers toiling in the fields all day. But if I'm honest, I'm more like one of the latecomers showing up around quitting time. I don't want fairness. I need mercy. I don't want fairness. I need grace. I need an employer with a generous heart who doles out wages even to those of us who showed up around sundown. And that's what this parable promises. A God who gives us not what we deserve, but what we need. Today, we see life from God's point of view. Not as a matter of fairness or unfairness, deserving or undeserving. Simply as a gift, a wonderful and generous gift. Amen.